in life, we find ourselves at times looking at different issues we contend with, different scenarios that come at us. And in those issues, oftentimes we find ourselves determining whether we can be devoted to accomplish what it is God has for us or whether we will miss that. And when I think about the span of years that I've been a pastor, I always recall different moments that stand out to me the most. In fact, last night I was recalling the story of one lady who, in the midst of her ailment and difficulty, found herself on the edge of her earthly story. And in the midst of that story, for her, it was really the beginning of a new story. But for her, she wanted to do something that would seal and confirm and affirm what it was that she had lived for. You see, that young lady had lived her life growing up and then maturing into life with a very clear direction. She knew that there were two boys that lived in her neighborhood, one on one side of her house and one on the other. And those two boys, she wanted to make sure she had the privilege of being able to influence them in the most amazing and powerful way that she could. And so as a result, she devoted herself to praying for them, encouraging them, blessing them. On one side of her home, a young boy grew up named Adrian Rogers. On the other side, a young boy grew up named Charles Fuller. Those two men, both in eternity at this point, faced life in a different scenario because one lady named Irma was devoted to impacting her life. Now you think about that for a moment. Was it by accident that she was placed in that home in those years to influence those young boys? And the answer is absolutely not. And what you discover is, if you go through life, you can find story after story. You find the story of the daughter who cares for the mother, or the father who cares for the children, or you find all these stories unfolding. In fact, just a few weeks ago, I was interacting with somebody that goes back to 30 plus years ago in my first church I served in, and it was interesting because I remembered so vividly what had transpired. And in that particular home, what had happened was a young couple had married, had birthed several children into their home, and one day the son came home and found a note on the table from the wife: "Gone to find myself, be back someday." And that note inspired him not to walk away from his children, because he then had that responsibility, but to instead assume a position of devotion. In other words, something that no one can take away from you. And today, we look at what happens when an authentic disciple finds himself at the point of true devotion. True devotion. In other words, moving beyond all the things that religion throws at you, and moving beyond all the circumstances that life throws at you, and moving beyond all the challenges that we sometimes contend with. Jesus contended with these things and dealt with them on a regular basis. And all of them were there to cause them to filter through and see what they were devoted to. Because if their devotion was centered in what they wanted, they would miss God. But if their devotion was centered in what He wanted, they would find God. And so that's why you find Jesus teaching so vividly and contending with those who had a false sense of devotion. They were devoted to rules, but never to righteousness. And Jesus kept breaking down those rules and showing them that your rules get you nowhere. You need to be devoted. You need to be committed. And so today, as we find ourselves in Luke chapter 6, verses 1 through 11, I want you to think about one question as you turn to that text. Excuse me. Because that text focuses in on what it means to really be devoted in life. And here's what I want you to see today. In these 11 verses, you'll see two unique pictures that are painted by Jesus and His life. The first one is those who are walking in the field with Him and are hungry. And the other one are those who have assembled in His house for the wrong reason, and what happens to them, and the ones who come for the right reason, which tells you something. Very carefully, we have to look at, as we gather into His house, what it is He has for us. And so here we find in this particular text that the whole issue is, what are we devoted to? What are we committed to? Because here's what happened. If someone gets so steeped in religion that they lose sight of Jesus, then the reality is they have missed all of that's important in life. They will have missed the very essence of life. And so today, when you think about it, your own life, regarding where you live, what are you truly devoted to in life? That's the real question. Because what you love, you will do. What it is you pursue will become your story. What it is that you listen to will become the tape that plays inside of your heart. And so you ask yourself the question today, what are you truly devoted to in life? And I'll tell you what you discover. It is easy to be devoted to things that don't count. For example, if you're an Arkansas fan today and you watched the score yesterday, you realize it's interesting. On Friday, everybody was talking about the Mighty Hogs. All right? On Saturday, everyone talking about the terrible coach. And I thought, how do you transition from the Mighty Hogs to terrible coach? You lose to Toledo. And what I want you to see today is this. You got to be careful what you focus on, because there is a team more important than the team you root for. All right? That's God's team. Because God's team has to be devoted to accomplishing his purpose. And what happens with Jesus? Jesus is assembling a team. He's drafting players off the field, into the team. And what I want you to think about today as you think about where you are is perhaps he's trying to draft you. Perhaps he's trying to say to you, are you devoted at the level you need to be? Because by the time we finish today, you'll have to ask yourself a question again and again and again. What am I truly devoted to in life? Because what it is you're devoted to will become your story. And what becomes your story will become your legacy. And so you just have to be wise enough to focus in on the right thing and devote yourself. And when we think about devotion, we think about being committed to something so distinctly that no one could question it. That's the devotion that Jesus is looking for. He's not looking for people who give a flippant response to Jesus. He's not looking for that. Excuse me. Sorry about that. You ever had like an edge of a cough and you can't get to it, but you know it's coming? Well, that one caught me off guard. So for those of you who like real formal people, sorry about that. It just happens to be how life works sometimes. Sometimes you got a cough, it comes at you, okay? So I hope I can get past that. In fact, let me take a drink so I'll make sure I'm good. Wine. No, I'm kidding. Okay. I'm only kidding, okay? Oh, for those of you who are serious, you're in big trouble at church today. If it was wine, I'd probably fall out. So the reality is that what you discover very quickly is what we devote ourselves to, what we zero in on, what becomes the focal point of our story, that is in essence what people remember about us. They will not remember how much money we had, what home we lived in, what car we drove, but they will remember what we loved. And so what happens is Jesus, what is he doing? He's filtering out their devotion and showing what happens when you only let religion rule. And today I'm going to show you a devotion grid that I developed to kind of help you see and understand that. Before we get there, though, let's look at Luke chapter 6. And let's read this story and see what's unfolding. Luke chapter 6, verse 1. Now it happened that he was passing through some grain fields on a Sabbath, and his disciples were picking the heads of grain, rubbing them in their hands, and eating the grain. But some of the Pharisees said, "Why do you do what is not lawful on the Sabbath?" And Jesus, answering them, said, "Have you not even read what David, when he was hungry, he and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God and took and ate the consecrated bread, which is not lawful for any to eat except the priests alone, and gave it to his companion?" And then Jesus comes to a profound moment, all right? Now this is going to set them on their heels. Look what he says in verse 5. "And he was saying to them, 'The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath.'" The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. Now I want you to see this, because you can't miss this the part of the picture. What he's saying here is that I'm Lord of the Sabbath, and I'm also in charge of what is going on regarding the Lord's day. Because there's a contrast here. What Jesus tries to make sure is, while Sabbath falls on Saturday, he's the Lord's day on Sunday, and he's the Lord of the Sabbath, and he's the Lord of the Lord's day. He came to establish that. That's why we come together in his house on the Lord's day, the first day of the week. All right? So look on. Verse 6. Watch what happened. Again, Luke chapter 6. Now verse 6. "On another Sabbath, he entered a synagogue and was teaching. And there was a man there whose right hand was withered. The scribes and the Pharisees were watching him closely to see if he healed on the Sabbath, so that they might find reason to accuse him. But he knew what they were thinking, and he said to the man with a withered hand, "Get up and come forward." And he got up and came forward. And Jesus said to them, "I ask you, is it lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath, to save a life or to destroy it?" And after looking around at them all, now I want you to, the commentators say in verse 10, Jesus took long enough to make sure he looked at everybody in the room. In other words, he's kind of stopped sitting, looking. And he looked around everybody. And by the way, there wasn't a Pharisee about to raise his hand. All right? So he looked at everybody. And what was he doing here? It's interesting because what Jesus was doing was making sure that what he was about was not some religious thing, but a personal thing that looked straight into the eyes of those who were following him. And listen carefully. When you are devoted to him, he looks into your eyes and you look straight at him. All right, so watch what happened. Look on. And he says in verse 10, and looking around at them, he said to him, "Stretch out your hand." And he did so, and his hand was restored. But they themselves were filled with rage and discussed together what they might do to Jesus. Now, when you get here, here's what you see. Here's the story of two groups of people. Sitting in the room as Jesus teaches, there's a group of people that are there who have every rule memorized, but they've forgotten everything about relationship with God. And on the other side, there's a guy there whose hand is withered, okay? And it's interesting to me because Luke notes it's his right hand. It's his right hand. And no doubt when Jesus was teaching, he saw that hand, that it was not mobile, that it was not being used. And there's no doubt that Jesus also, as the Bible says, he knew what they were thinking. And you got to stop and think about this because this comes up over and over again in the Gospels. Jesus knows everything we're thinking. Does that not scare you sometime? I mean, think about it. He knows what you're thinking before you think it. That's even scarier. And yet here what happens is these people who are very religious, they've zoned in on trying to catch Jesus doing the wrong thing. Which, by the way, how do you find perfection ever doing the wrong thing? You don't. And yet they kept looking for ways to squeeze out what it was that Jesus was up to. So let's look at this for a second. Because when you look at this text, I just want you to see what happens. Verse 5, what does he say? He said, "I am the Son of Man, is the Lord of the Sabbath." Verse 10, what does he say? "Stretch out your hand, because I'm going to heal it. As I look at all the others are here." And he did it. Verse 11, "But they themselves were filled with rage and discussed together what they might do to Jesus." Now, here's what I want you to see. When Jesus establishes authority, they rebel against it and look in another direction, which tells you something. When someone misunderstands the authority of God, what they really are doing is living under their own authority. Because what Jesus is trying to show here, there's only one authority that carries you forward in life, and it is the authority of the one who has known you before you ever formed your mother's womb. It is God. So what happens here is, all of a sudden, they get exposed to this whole issue of what happens when Jesus is Lord of the Sabbath. What does he do? And two things happen here. And by the way, if you're reading carefully, you'll notice what happened in verse 6. He says, "on another Sabbath," which tells you something. From a Saturday to a Saturday, a lot of things are happening. Okay? Which tells you, you never want to miss a moment that God has for you because it's a moment he's reserved just for you. And being in his house today, for example, is a moment he reserved for you. Now, you may be sitting there saying, "I'm not sure why. I'm not sure the basis of that." Listen carefully. It is not always your understanding of why. It is your understanding of who that makes the difference. Because you may not have all the answers to why, but you will always have the answer to who. Because when you are devoted to him, he is the entire story. And so what happens here is Jesus is contending with those who obviously have great knowledge. But listen carefully. You can be as smart as a scientist and miss Jesus. And that's what happened to the legalists that were dealing with Jesus, the Pharisees who were looking for ways to contend with him. All right, so, and they come at him in two different ways. First of all, they're in the field. The other time, they're in the house. Okay, I'll show you both those contrasts in just a moment because I want you to see something. Where you're working, he is with you. Where you're living, he is with you. Where you worship, he is with you. He is with you wherever you go. And so what happens is you begin to say, wait a minute now, there's a big difference here. These people who are contending with Jesus, they are legalists. I mean, and here's what you discover. And I want to show you this grid because I want you to get this down, all right? Because this is a devotion grid. This is a good test for you to look at where you're at in life, all right? And here's what you're going to discover. There are aspects of religion that sneak into our story if we're not careful, okay? So I want you to be very careful in writing these down because I want you to look at them. Then I want you to be honest because I ask you the question at the beginning of the message, what are you truly devoted to? What are you truly devoted to? All right, so watch this. Religion, watch this, religion always offers legalism. Religion always gives you that legal part of the story. Jesus, and so if you're doing a grid, you got religion on one side, Jesus on the other. Jesus gives you righteousness. In other words, the capacity to be right with God. Don't get caught up with that big word, because really, you break it all down. And what he's saying is, if you are in him, you can be right through him. All right, so keep that in mind. So then the second thing that happens is when you're contending with religion, judgment is a basis of thought all the time. You're always looking to figure out how someone is wrong and what it is that has created that response. But what is God's response? What does Jesus give us? Jesus gives us grace. I mean, think about the difference there. You ever been around somebody who's judgmental? What are they saying? They're saying religion is more important to me than Jesus. That's what he's trying to say here. And that's what he's going to teach us as we look at this text. All right? So, first of all, we look at religion, and what does it do? It creates something in us that we never would want in our own lives. It creates legalism. It creates judgment. There's a third thing, and that is when a person lives inside of religion, criticism is an absolute way of life. But what happens with a person who lives in Jesus, kindness is a way of life. So what you're going to discover is you start thinking about it. Now watch this carefully. It's easy to get critical about things that don't count. And what happens is, it's only to the degree that you devote yourself to him that you become kind. In other words, you can be in church and be mean as a bulldog or mean as a snake. It's not being in church that gets you there. It's being in Jesus because Jesus does that. He does something inside of us. So think for a second. Wait a minute now. If someone is religious, pride is a way of life for them. But if somebody was in Jesus, humility is a way of life. I mean, think about it for a moment. Think about how many proud people you meet who are much more concerned about how they look than who they are. And I'm going to tell you what Jesus does. He just breaks apart the thought process that pride can get you anywhere. Because listen carefully, pride can get you anywhere but a ticket going in the wrong direction. That's what pride does. Then there's one final thing I want you to add to the grid, because as you think about it, begin to realize that a person who's religious, arrogance is who they are. But a person who's in Jesus, compassion is their story. Now, I want you to get that grid down in your mind, and I want you to look at it, because I gave you five qualities of religion, five qualities that connect to those who are following Jesus. And here's what you're going to discover. If you're not careful, you can get proud at a moment. You can get critical at a moment. If you're not careful, you get arrogant at some moment. And the truth of the matter is that you don't want to let any of that get in your way. Because what you want to do is you want to be a person who's living inside of righteousness, who exhibits humility, who connects into what grace is all about, who gives kindness a good story, who's compassionate by way of life. And what I want you to see today as we look at this text, what you need to grab hold of to take out of here is this. Be wise enough to devote yourself to something that is eternal. Because if you're not careful, you can devote yourself to something that has no eternal consequence. For example, when you work with your children and raising them, or your teenagers, or you impact those who are relationally around you, whoever they may be, you want to always make sure you point them to something more than yourself. Because if you point them only to you, then all they have is what you can give them. But if you point them to Jesus, what happened? They have a model to follow. And I'm going to tell you, you think about this for a second. Show me a child or a teenager, somebody who learns how to be kind to others, who learns how to extend grace to others, who learns how to impact others. And I thank God for the wonderful teenagers he put in our church, because lots of them exhibit these qualities that I'm talking about that stand out as being followers of Jesus. And I thank God that Jack and Cassie work with those kids to impact them and to challenge them and to motivate them. And whether they're working in small group strategy on Wednesdays or whether they're in Bible study on Sunday morning, being impacted to become who God wants them to be. Because I'm going to tell you, in life, if you're not careful, if you only get religion, you get nothing to get you where He wants you to go. But if you get Jesus, something happened in an amazing way. So let's break this story down into two parts. I want you to see it because, remember, two Sabbaths, all right? One Saturday, another Saturday. Jesus is doing what He always does. He goes into the place where those who are religious are hanging out so He can contend with what it is that is true. All right? And so, as a result of that, He begins to teach and establish very clear direction regarding two things. Now, what I want you to see today is this. The first thing I want you to see is, where does Jesus meet us at? And what happens with those who are walking with them and with Him is Jesus meets us in the field of life. Sometimes He is walking with us in the midst of all that we have going on. Because here's what happened. And why does Luke record this? By the way, you want to find the detail of the story about Jesus, read the Gospel of Luke. Because what the Gospel of Luke does, it catches details that the other writers don't catch. Like the fact that the hand of the man who had a withered hand was the right hand. Luke only catches that. All right, so what happens is this text is very detailed. And they're walking along and they're in a field. And well, obviously it's interesting because there must have been some people walking with Him that were not excited about to be with Him at all. It's like they were dragging along looking for a problem, looking for an issue, looking for a reason. And then all of a sudden, they begin to contend with Jesus. And you'll notice what they do here. Let's look at it and kind of see how it unfolds. Verse 1, now it happened that He was passing through some grain fields on the Sabbath, and His disciples were picking the heads of grain and rubbing them in their hands and eating the grain. When you read this, you immediately realize something, that when Jesus meets us in the field of life, He's always committed to meeting our real needs. Because you know what He could have said? We don't have time to eat. We got to get there. Anybody here ever travel with somebody who's in such a hurry to get there, they're not stopping for anything, not going to eat, not going to do anything, going to go? I mean, I grew up in a family like that. My dad, when we got in the car, we were gone. And we were not stopping until we arrived at our destination. Well, Jesus, what does He do? He's the opposite. They're walking in the field and they're all hungry. And what does He do? He stops and lets them eat. The only problem is that all the rules of the Sabbath said that you got to be careful. You know, you could eat food that was already sitting there waiting on you that you had put out there early, but you couldn't go and get in the field and harvest the grain on Sabbath. And obviously, Jesus was more concerned about their physical need than some rule that He knew they would never be able to contend with anyway. Because if you look carefully at the rules connected to the Sabbath, and anyone who's ever been to Holy Land, you realize they still practice some of these rules. Now, those who need to massage them in order to do other things, they do. All right, but the reality is that they still practice a lot of these rules. And the first time I went to Holy Land many years ago, I'll never forget when Sabbath came, there was cold boiled eggs there. There were certain things you think, what happened to that omelet? Well, the omelet was history on Sabbath because they had rules they had to contend with, they had to follow. So Jesus obviously dealt with the same thing. But what He wanted to do was show those who were watching that He was very concerned about our need. And here's what I want you to keep in mind. Never question that He is not aware of every need you will ever face in life. Be it financial, be it emotional, be it spiritual, He's aware. And what I want you to see today is this. He meets you at the point of your need. He meets you there. And so what happened? They began to contend. Look at verse 2. But some of the Pharisees said, why do you do what is not lawful on the Sabbath? And Jesus answered them saying, have you not even read what David did when he was hungry, he and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God and took and ate the consecrated bread, which is not lawful for any to eat except the priests alone, and gave it to his companions? What does He do here? He conquers the rules of religion again so that the Pharisees will realize something, that He came to conquer everything that would not carry you into eternity. He conquered every rule that was there. It was so religious that it didn't get them anywhere. And what I want you to see today is you think about that. If you have some religious things that connect into you that are centered not in who He is, but who you are, get back to Him and watch what happens. Look on, though, because then I want us to see what happens in that text. He makes reference to an Old Testament story that is very applicable to what we're looking at today, because what happens is David, who is king, who is king takes hold of a situation and deals with it the right way. I'll show you that in just a moment. But I want to show you one other thing, because in verse 5, the Lord says this, the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. And I want you to see this, because it's more than a short phrase he says that establishes a thought. It is here that he establishes very, very clearly his position on earth. I mean, what he says here is, I am the key of the Lord's day on Sunday, but I'm also the Lord of the Sabbath. And what he was trying to say to those who were contending with him, when you're in my field, be careful what you ask. Because in my field, I am established as Lord of all. Which tells you something. Is Jesus the same on Monday that he is on Sunday? And the answer is yes. And what he was trying to say was, is Jesus the same on Saturday as he is on Sunday? Yes, he is. And what I want you to see today is this. When he establishes rule in our hearts, we look at what we're devoted to in an even clearer fashion. We begin to say, you know what? That's what I want to live for. That's what I want to accomplish. That's what allows me to be who I'm supposed to be. You see, it's interesting because what happens is he begins to find those who are go-to people. In other words, what he's doing here is he's teaching his disciples, he's looking who is going to talk about it and who's going to do it. Because what did religion do? Religion talked about everything. Jesus said, you got to put on your shoes and move. You got to do it. And so he brings them, first of all, into the field. So then that experience passes, and then they find themselves the next Sabbath, in verse 6, in the house. And the second thing I want you to see, because I want you to see, is he meets us in the fields of life, but he also meets us in his house to accomplish his purpose. So let's look at it, if we could. Before we do that, though, to make sure we see the segue, he uses David as an illustration. He uses the story of David. So let's look back and see if we can't take just a quick peek at what it was that David was trying, that David illustrates for us in a text. So hang on one second. I'm going to make sure that I have referenced it right before I give it to you. And by the way, I didn't give you that Matthew verse on purpose. I'll come back to it later maybe. All right? I want to make sure no matter what that I don't end up turning you in the wrong direction. All right? And I'm not going to give you the other text either, because I just realized I gave the wrong text to Eddie to put on the page. So it was a great verse, but we're not going to look at it. Let me tell you the story. All right? You can find it if you look at David's story. It's a story of David and his men are being pursued by Saul. Saul is in pursuit, coming after him in every direction. And those who are with him, same story as what those who are with Jesus, those who are with him are really hungry. And so David shows that up at Ahimelech, the priest's place there at Nob, a mile north of Jerusalem, shows up and says, man, we're hungry. We need some food. And it's interesting because the priest says, okay, here's the only thing you have to do. You have to promise me that those who are with you are going to be pure. That's the promise. You've got to be pure. And David says, yes, they are. So they ate that bread. All right? And obviously, that bread was always reserved. Those 12 loaves were always reserved for the priest only to eat. But that need took precedent because, watch this, just like David was king, Jesus is king. And so what happens is, Jesus shows that when he comes on the scene, watch this, he meets every need. And what is holy is those who pursue him and yield themselves to him. So let's look on though. So get in your mind, and here's what we're tracking with. Don't lose track here. We're tracking on what happens when we're devoted to the right thing. Because when we're devoted to the right thing, something happens amazing in our life. And that's what happens in this text. Because here's a guy who walked into church not realizing that when he walked out, his right hand would work. And I don't know if you've any of them here, in fact, there's some in here that have hurt hands right now. Annie Pearl back here got a hand that doesn't work right now. It's strained and hurt. We have at times things that don't work, limbs that don't work and stuff. And you know what? If you're right-handed and your right hand not working well, it's frustrating. And it's challenging. If you're left-handed and it's not working, it's challenging. So this one guy walked into church not knowing that it was going to be the best day of his life. And here's what I want you to see. We ought to walk into his house always waiting for it to be the best day of our life. We ought to walk in saying, you know what? I don't know what it is he's going to do, but maybe he will do something in me I never dreamed possible. Maybe your commitment has faded. Your passion has moved away. And all of a sudden you're in church, you're going, no, 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 I want it back. I want it back. And what you discover is he'll meet you right where you're at. and do something absolutely amazing inside of you. So let's look on. Let's look what happened. Here he is. All of a sudden, he calls us to his house. Because why is he in the synagogue? Why is he there? He's there to teach something. And I'm going to tell you, every Sunday when we gather, we answer the clarion call of Jesus. Come into my house. Forsake not the assembling yourself, as is the habit of some. Come into my house. And watch what happened. Because what I want you to see today is this. When you come into his house, there's always a chance he's going to do something absolutely amazing. But it all rests in the condition of your heart and what you're devoted to. So all of a sudden, look what happens. He calls them into his house. And what you see here is there's a story of a guy who has a need that only he can meet. And what I want you to see and never miss is this. There are needs that only God can meet. There are needs that no one humanly can meet, but God can meet them. And what you see in this story is here is a place where Jesus calls us to his house so that his compassion can call out to every need. Can you imagine how well-dressed all the Pharisees were that day in the synagogue? I mean, they had it all starched. They had it all going on. They had it all. They were all dressed in their robe. No doubt they were sitting there going, here we are. Perhaps they had their legs crossed because they had on really fine shoes. I mean, they had it all laid out. And all of a sudden, a guy walks in there. He walks in with his hand like this. No doubt he sits down in humility. And what does Jesus do? Jesus doesn't see all the religious people who are devoted to the wrong thing. He sees the one guy who's devoted to the right thing, and that is that God can do something in their life. And what I want you to see today is this. He's watching everything. His compassion extends to every need we'll ever have. But not just that. What you see here is he says to this man, and makes it very clear, verse 8, get up and come forward. Now, you know, he could have been intimidated by that. I mean, by the way, we have that every Sunday because sometimes we call people to come forward and it's an intimidating thought. But it's interesting because what is the altar call all about? What's the invitation all about? It's an invitation to get up and come forward. And what happens is this guy's sitting there. Now, you got to think about it in mind. Think about it in your own mind for a moment. In front of all those people, I mean, all those people who look so nice and dress so properly, and I have lived my life with this withered hand. And what's interesting, I want you to see this. Because here's what Jesus was trying to say. It may not be your hand, but it could be your heart that's withered. And if your heart is withered, let one put blood back into your heart that flows all the way from Calvary. That's what he's trying to do here. And so what happens, all of a sudden, he makes this command. And he says to him very clearly, get up and come forward. Now, you know what the guy could have done? He could have said, you know what? I think I'll come later because that just does not get me. And what is he going to do? But let me tell you, he didn't hesitate, did he? He got up, he came forward, and as a result of that, God did something absolutely amazing. I want to ask you, have you ever thought about, when you read this text, what it was like when he went home that day to eat, and instead of having to use his left hand for everything, he picked up his right hand, picked a fork up, and picked that up and said, you know what, I'm going to eat. In fact, he probably took that hand, did a lot of things like this, moving around. Because all of a sudden, what was weak is all of a sudden strong. And what I want to show you is this, when we are weak, he is strong. Now, when you think about that, here he says this command, get ready to move forward. But what happens in verse 11? You can't miss this, because what happens is, rage arrives again. Verse 11, but they themselves were filled with rage, and discuss together what they might do with Jesus. And you know what's interesting? His agenda ruled over their anger. Because what does Jesus do as a result of their anger? He chooses 12 apostles. You know what he could have done? He said, oh man, these people are really mad. And it's interesting what anger does. Because the quickest pathway away from devotion is anger. Because when somebody gets angry, what happens is, they all of a sudden lose sight of what it was they love. And here all of a sudden, these people who were there watching and listening, they get, oh man, we are so upset. But what I want you to see today is this. Jesus did not miss a beat. And what you and I need to see today in our own lives is this. You may see things that come at you that might cause you to go, you know what, that makes me mad. That overwhelms me. But don't let your anger rule. Because watch this. His agenda always rules over our anger. And when you do that, then you become a truly devoted follower. Because we've been talking about what it means to be an authentic follower. So let's look at this, just a snapshot, and we're done. All right? When you are a true follower of Jesus, the greatest test, watch this, the greatest test of devotion is love. That's the greatest test. Because what happens is, whatever you love, that's what you're going to major on. That's what you're going to focus on. So the greatest test of devotion is love. The greatest affirmation of devotion is worship. Because when you worship Him, something begins to happen inside of you. And it's not, by the way, it is not the songs that are sung. It's the spirit of the heart that says, I want to devote myself to God. And when you do that, something begins to happen because you receive the greatest blessing. And the greatest blessing of devotion is peace. And everybody longs for peace more than anything else. Because what peace does, it passes understanding. It does something inside of you. And the greatest honor that devotion creates in all of our lives is that we are obedient. That obedience becomes a way of life for us. So today I ask you, when you think about that, all that we've looked at, I ask you a simple but very important question. Are you devoted to Him? Are you committed to Him? Because what happens is, if you're truly devoted, something begins to happen inside of you. And it may be that you are here and you heard these words that Jesus commanded. Get up, move forward. Very powerful, simple words. But what He was saying was to the guy with the withered hand, if you come up here, I'll change your life forever. And what He was really trying to say to you and me is when we devote ourselves to the right thing, something amazing happens. And so just a moment, we have the privilege to be able to challenge you. Perhaps you're here today and you realize you need to get up and move forward. And you read these words, you said, you know what, that speaks to me. And you may be sitting there saying, I don't know all the aspects of what moving forward means, but I do know this. I am devoted to Jesus, and I want to accomplish His purpose. If that's the case, then watch what happens in just a moment. Let's pray together. Father, thank You. Thank You for the joy of being able to come into Your house and experience who You are. This is Your house. And when I think about how You meet us in the field of life, how You meet us in Your house, You meet us everywhere because You're always with us. And I pray in a special way that yet You will allow what we've looked at today to speak to the heart of anyone who's here. And if there's someone in the room who needs to get up and move forward, that they would realize this is the day to do it. I pray, Lord, You touch hearts, move lives, speak to hearts in special ways so that they realize this is the day that God has made for them. And perhaps there's someone here, they don't have a withered hand, but their heart has withered. They need to be prayed over and encouraged. They need to be restored by way of focus. They need to yield to something greater than themselves, and they need You, Lord. If that's the case, I pray You'd move in their lives as well. Lord, at this moment, we yield to You, and we say the word that You said. We get up, and we move forward. We trust You to do what only You can do. And I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.